Midway USA brand product designers have one straightforward goal: develop high-quality, technically sound products and deliver them to customers at reasonable prices. If you are immersed in the shooting sports industry and pay close attention to every single detail, you know our products are built right and stand up to everyday use. Who has shooting mats and range bag systems to hunting clothing and just about everything for the outdoors? Log on and shop 24/7 with super fast shipping. MidwayUSA.com.
Join Captain Justin Leake and Meredith McCord for the best fishing action along Panama City Beach. Tune in to Chasing the Sun every Sunday at 9:30 a.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.
Welcome to the Casting Across Fly Fishing Podcast. I'm Matthew of castingacross.com, where I explore the quarry and culture of fly fishing. This is the 228th episode of the podcast. So in whatever digital way you found your way to this, thank you for listening. Now, if you found this in an analog format, do let me know who your bootleg Casting Across tape supplier is. I'm very interested. Today, we're going to be talking about records. But before we get to that, we are 2 weeks away from another Casting Across Fly Fishing Accusations edition of the podcast. And all that is a interaction podcast. So I do my best to answer every email, every social media chirp, every comment on the website. But every once in a while, something comes through and it's just a really good question, or it's a really good follow-up on an article or on a podcast. And so it gives me an opportunity to add like another 5 or 7 minutes down a little bit of a rabbit trail, or to offer some sort of clarification if I didn't articulate a point very well and somebody was asking a question about that. So if you have a question like that, if you have a comment, if you do, you know, want to point out something I said and say you disagree and I can interact with you on that, then do let me know. Matthew@castingacross.com. You can also use the contact form on the website. You can leave a comment under any article on castingacross.com, or you can use any of my social media sources to reach out and see if something that you have to say is something that will make it on the Accusations podcast. So as I mentioned, we are going to be talking about records today. Now, when I'm talking about records, I'm not talking about big fish. That's fun, though. I mean, that's worth talking about. And, you know, honestly, for the first years that I was fishing, so in the mid to late 90s, it was at that time where there was this anticipation, particularly in the bass fishing world, of the world record, George Perry's bass from the 1930s, being broken, because there was all of these large 20-ish pound fish that were being caught in California reservoirs, fish that were getting fat on stocked rainbow trout and things like that. And so there was this this sense that the record was going to get broken. And it actually got broken / tied. The way that the IFGA does records is you have to beat it by a few ounces. And so there was a Japanese angler who caught a 22.5 pound bass in Japan, but it wasn't enough to set itself apart as the world record. That happened sometime in the last 15 years. But anyway, what does this have to do with the records that I'm talking about, which is record keeping? And it has to do with the fact that to catch a big fish, it takes a methodological approach. It takes being very detail oriented, paying attention to lots of little variables. And so that's the kind of records, so record keeping, that we're going to talk about today. Now, why should you keep records? And why should you listen to me talk about records for 20 minutes? Well, for a few main reasons. I'm going to talk about four main reasons of why you should keep records of your fishing. And you can take them all. You can take one of them. You can take one of them in the slightest form, and I think that you will be benefiting from them. So what does it mean to keep records? Well, it doesn't mean you need to keep a formal fishing journal or a fishing diary. I don't know many anglers who sit down after a day on the water and, you know, the dear diary, today I went fishing. But that's not a bad idea. And it can be anything from a little moleskin notebook to a fancy leather-bound book that you have that you can, you know, write in, all the way down to a legal pad. Or, as what I often do when I take notes, is I use Excel. I use a spreadsheet that allows me to organize things in the way that I want to see them. So the first kind of record keeping is basically the fishing journal. So if you've ever been given a fishing journal, or you've ever seen these at the bookstore, what is it? It is date, time you went fishing, What was the temperature? What was the sky like? What was the barometer? What kind of fish did you catch? What did you use to catch them on? And any other details. So this is really just aggregating data. Now, what's the point of this, aside being maybe obsessive compulsive? Well, the point of this is that you can begin to see patterns. So this is what relates back to the world record largemouth that I was talking about earlier. Being able to figure out when certain fish feed. You can get this information the more and more you fish. You know certain seasons, you know certain cloud cover, you know certain rainfall, and all of these things trigger different fish feeding. So for example, on some of the creeks I used to fish in Pennsylvania, I knew that as a rainfall happened the previous day, and the water was still off color, but coming down. And if it was still overcast, that for a number of reasons, the bigger brown trout would be out. Fish that I usually wouldn't encounter until right before dark or even after dark. These fish would now be out of their holding spots and being in their feeding lanes. In times where the water was still off color and it was still a bit dark out, but it was almost as if they were tricked by the light of the sun being obscured, as well as from the cloud cover, as well as from the turbidity and the all of the gunk and that was still in the water after the rain was coming down. So, I mean, that's a pattern that I didn't need to write down. It's just something that I observed, but I kind of wonder how many other small variables I would have noticed had I kept some sort of record. So is this something where you need to go out and buy an angling journal and fill in every one of those things? You need to like go home and figure out what the barometer was. No, you don't need to do that. But what you can do is start to just keep a record. I went fishing today. This is the temperature. This is how I did. These are the flies I used. What you might even do in a situation like this is you might think that you do really well with a fly. That like this is a great fly because maybe you had a good season with it maybe 3-4 years ago that you were fishing a I don't know, to pick a random fly, a blue-wing olive in the springtime, and you caught lots of fish. And so now you are always fishing a blue-wing olive, and you think, yeah, this is a fly I catch fish on. But if you were to keep records, you realize, you know what, I'm actually not catching as many fish on that as I thought. And it's just that this is a comfort fly, and this is a security fly, but it's really not as productive as I thought it was. And so maybe there's another reason why I was catching fish, or I just got lucky that one season. So little things like that you can start to figure out. You can also figure out patterns. And these things can really be helpful in the long run. Here's another example of that. I have a friend that lived on a stream, incredibly involved in conservation. And because he kept a pretty rudimentary, but at the same time, thorough angling journal, when they came in to do some stream surveys, his records, although they weren't scientific, although they weren't official, I mean, he didn't electroshock, he just fished a lot. He was able to demonstrate how the brown trout had really come in and displaced the brook trout in a particular part of the stream over the last 10 years. And he showed that there was a significant shift, empirically, you know, however someone's journal can be empirical, an empirically measurable shift in that. Now, is that why you should keep your journals? No, but there could be interesting things. If you're fishing in a stream that has different species of trout or different species of fish, you might notice season after season how things shift and how things change. And it's just, it may be for a point of curiosity. And that should be good enough. I mean, you shouldn't do something simply because it's going to yield results. There should be a sense of joy in it. We'll talk about that with kind of the fourth thing here in a second. So the first thing is keeping records because you never know how that data could be useful to you. So pick whatever fields you like. Pick whatever fields you think are helpful for you. I think bare minimum, you know, to keep the date, to keep the temperature, to keep where you fished, what you were using, and what you caught. Whether that be number, size, species, that's up to you. But that's just a kind of a good way to get some details. And even little things like, if you're fishing for trout in a river, there's less variables. If you're fishing for fish in a lake, that's when you really start to notice things. You really start to notice differences in where fish are holding, their depth based upon seasonality. And that can be really helpful because as fancy as we think we are as fly fishers, when we're fishing in 3-foot runs or, you know, 3-foot, you know, 2-foot riffles on a stretch of river, If you're trying to fish a big reservoir or a big natural lake, and you're trying to locate fish, not just across the surface of that water, but also down 10, 15, 20, 50 feet, there's a whole other series of variables you have to take into account. And so record keeping is very, very helpful when it comes to that kind of fishing, because your electronics, they're going to help you once you find the fish, but you have to find the fish before you can get your electronics to hone in on where those fish are. All right. So that's the first kind of record keeping. And again, spreadsheet is great because then you can sort by where you fished, when you fished. You can sort by how many fish you caught. You can sort by other variables, other notes. I love spreadsheets. I keep spreadsheets for everything. And here's another thing I keep spreadsheets for. I keep spreadsheets for my gear. And for a few reasons. For one, it's to know kind of how long I've had stuff. And this is helpful for rods. It's helpful for reels. But where it's really helpful is fly line. I keep just a quick spreadsheet whenever I take a spool of fly line out of the box and I string it up on a reel. I note when that was. And then what I also do is I note who made the fly line, what kind of fly line it is. Because although certain brands, and more these days, particularly in the higher end lines, they're going to have that printed somewhere on that line, usually in the head section and also on the end that you attach to your backing. But whether you lose that, it fades, you have to snip it back, or you buy a fly line that doesn't have that, it's good to know what line you have on a reel, especially if it's not the line that you use every day. If it's the line you use every day, you're probably going to remember what it is. But to keep some sort of record of what it is helpful. But then also what you now have is you have a date of when you started using that line. There's a chance that you might say, okay, I haven't used that line that much. You know, I can't believe it's failing already. This is awful. I'm never going to buy from brand X ever again because this line should have lasted a lot longer. But then you go back and you realize, you know what? I've had it for like 6 years and I fished it pretty hard. That's probably worth the $60, $70 that I paid for it or something to that effect. For me, it gives me a time to go through my, you know, entire drawer full of reels and look at those and say, you know what, this line's been on there for a few years and I fished it pretty hard. I try to do a good job every season of looking at my line, but I haven't used this reel or this line, you know, for whatever reason. I just haven't been fishing a sink tip. I haven't been fishing a floating line in the salt. And so this line's been, you know, even though this is one of my main reels, I haven't fished it that much this year or this season. So it gives me a chance to go back and look at it and give it a clean, give it an inspection. And then also I'm not guessing as to how old it is and if it's falling apart, you know, is it falling apart prematurely or is this really what a five-year-old line should look like if it gets use? So for lines, it's a good idea to keep a record of stuff. And then other things too. You know, I've had that conversation with some people. Oh, I bought, you know, the waders from this brand and man, they fell apart. Okay. Well, how long did you have them? I don't know. I guess I got them I've had them for like 5 or 6 years. Well, waders that if you're fishing hard out of waders for 5 or 6 years, and for a lot of people, they don't take great care of them. They don't store them well. 5 or 6 years is probably what you should expect. And whether you pay $100 for them or $400 for them, if you're not taking care of them, 5 or 6 years is not bad. So that's a you problem. It's not a waiter problem. Now, could they fail because they were poorly made? Yeah, but there's ways to tell that. So even just keeping a record of when you acquired things, it helps you pay attention to you know, is this something that I'm not going to trust this brand again, or maybe I should take better care of my gear because things are falling apart prematurely. So I like to keep records in that way. I also like to, keep a record of what exactly something is and maybe a couple of notes on where I got it from, just so that I can have a good kind of memory bank where I'm not guessing where did I get this piece of gear? How old is this piece of gear? If I bought it used, where did I get it from? And note that it's used. Just all those little things. It might not have any bearing, but entering that data in for 10 seconds on a line in a spreadsheet, it's, in my opinion, it's worth having. So first, you have your general record keeping. Second, you have keeping track of your gear and where it is and where it's from. And thirdly, I would say keep a record of your fish. I have a friend who's putting a book out soon, and in the back of it, in one of the appendices, I'm not sure how you say that, if there's more than one appendix, there is the IFGA record of fish, the list of all the fish that the IFG recognizes as sport fish. And I thought it was pretty cool because, first of all, it's public domain. And secondly, it's kind of cool to just look through them. But then he put a little checkbox on it. When did you catch this fish? Now, all of these hundreds of fish, all these hundreds of ocean fish, like there's no way that anyone is going to have a realistic shot of catching all these fish. I'm sure somebody has done it. However, it's neat to be able to see what you have caught. Now, I remember growing up and spending some time in Arkansas, spending some time in Missouri, spending some time in some other parts of the country, and I just caught weird fish. And as a 14, 15-year-old, you're like, okay, it's not a largemouth bass, throw it back. It's not a trout, throw it back. And now I'm like, I wish I knew what that was. And this was before the ubiquity of cell phones and cell phone cameras. And so I don't have a record of those things. But I'm sure there's some weird fish that, I know I caught weird fish. Fish I couldn't even ID. But it would be cool to have a record saying, okay, I caught that. For no other reason than to say, yeah, I caught that fish. Now, that might not have any allure to you. That might sound just completely contrary to the ethos of fly fishing. But to keep a record of the fish that you have caught, and then even think of your personal best, not in a competitive sense. Although, if you want to, that's fine. But just an idea of saying, yeah, I've caught a 20-inch rainbow trout. I've caught a 24-inch brown trout. I've caught a 6-pound, largemouth bass. Whatever it might be, just to keep some sort of record of that, and to be able to celebrate, okay, I've never caught I was talking to somebody recently, actually, and they've never caught a brown trout. I don't know how, I don't know why they've caught. Big rainbows, they've caught big brookies, they've caught cutthroats, they've caught big fish out in the ocean. For whatever reason, they haven't caught a brown trout. And part of that is, I think, where they live. But it's just something that she is pursuing. I'm like, okay, go for it. I could probably tell you where to go and how to do it. But I think she's probably gotten that advice before. It just hasn't worked out. But it's just little small milestones and things that people can pursue. And that might be something that you're interested in. Or if you're fishing in the ocean, that's a great way to catch new species every time you go out. And ways to change up the goal of how you fish. I know people who are into microfishing. And if you want a rabbit hole to fall down, look at microfishing. And this is where you get into these tiny fish that are not sport fish, but there are so much variety and diversity in maybe even the streams that you fish regularly. And the people that do microfishing are catching lots of different fish because what they're going for is basically bagging all different species and trying to collect the biodiversity of a stream and be able to catalog it in their own head and their own experience. So that's a third thing that you can keep record of and for. All right. So general record keeping, second gear, third, what and how big and where you caught fish. And lastly, and this is the one that really ties into casting across, it's a great way to preserve memories. There's been times where I have kept a journal and times that I have not. And as someone who now writes about and speaks about and shares fly fishing multiple times a week, I wish I had been more diligent in my younger years to keep records. I'm talking 25 years ago, some of these things, and sometimes they kind of blend together. And I have a hard time of recalling, did both of these happen things at the same time? Were these two different things? Was it on this stream or that stream? It has nothing to do with losing my memory, hopefully. It has everything to do with the fact that I just fished so much, 25 years ago, 20 years ago, 15 years ago, that a lot of those things that were on the same streams, fishing for the same fish, using the same gear, probably wearing the same clothes, they start to blend together. So keeping records and saying this happened on this day, and beyond this happened this day, this is how I felt, this is what I thought, this is some obscure thing I noticed. Those small words, and if you take pictures, those images can really become touchstones that tether to you to that experience. So whether you plan on writing about fly fishing or doing a podcast about fly fishing or sharing your experiences with your children and grandchildren, simply for the sake of remembering a few quick notes, one photo that stands out, maybe a lot more than a picture of a fish might, can bring you back to that moment and allow you to enjoy reflecting on the experience that you had. If you don't enjoy the idea of keeping track of how many or how big a fish you caught, if you don't enjoy the idea of keep cataloging your gear, and if you certainly don't enjoy the idea of keeping all of the data that comes out of every fishing trip, then you still might enjoy the memories that you can keep track of if you just keep a very simple record of your fishing time. That could be in a little Moleskine journal. That could be in a spreadsheet. So I would encourage you to bare minimum do that and toy around with it. Try it for a season. Try it for a month. If this is a huge taxing thing, then don't do it. Now, what I will say is whether you use an app or whether you just use like the notes function on your phone, that's a great way to do it. It's right there. You can do it on the water. I wouldn't suggest that. You can do it in the car after you're on the water. You know, it's just a very simple way to add a couple of details. I am not a fan of apps that kind of record your data and then share them from a crowd sourcing kind of process. That's I don't think that's a helpful thing to you or the angling community. But there are plenty of apps that you can just record information for yourself and it syncs up with your desktop or something else. And I think that's really good. Trout Routes is one of those apps that doesn't do that. So I talked about Trout Routes a few weeks ago and they do not share your information that you can store on their app. All right, there you go. Record keeping. Not record holding, not record breaking, but record keeping in fly fishing. I think it's worth your time. I think it's something that if you even just use a little bit of it, you will definitely appreciate it and it will be helpful for you both on the water today and in the future. This week on castingacross.com, the first article is called Don't Step Past Bootfoot Waders. Don't step past bootfoot waders. See what I did there. So I haven't ever owned a pair of bootfoot waders. Never, ever, because that's just not what you do in fly fishing. You find a nice pair of waders that fit your body, and you find a nice pair of boots that fit your feet, and you lace those suckers on, and you go fishing. Well, that was all fine and good until I started hunting ducks a few years ago, and then my feet and my ankles got so cold. And I said, never again. After that first season, I went out and bought a pair of insulated bootfoot waders. And I thought, you know what? I've been told this stability is going to be bad and the traction is going to be bad. But it is what it is. I'd rather fall down than be cold all the time. Let me tell you, I was okay walking on ice, walking on snow, walking on mud, walking on rocky river bottoms, getting in and out of a kayak, doing all sorts of the things that you would do while fly fishing. I did in these bootfoot waders, and I was fine. Now, there are some drawbacks. There are some things that aren't going to be the same. They're not going to take the place of my nice fly fishing waders and fly fishing boots. But if you're fishing in cold weather, or you are fishing in the cold water of maybe a tailwater or something like that, then definitely check out not just bootfoot waders, but insulated bootfoot waders. And the waders that I have are insulated bootfoot waders where you can take the insulation out of the wader body themselves. So they're great. I absolutely am 100% sold on the idea. I am past the point of fly fishing snobbery, and I am happy to wear these waders whether I'm fishing or hunting or just hanging out outside. That's not true. I wouldn't do that. The Wednesday article on Casting Across was called Fly Fishing Gear for Life. Fly Fishing Gear for Life. And this kind of explores the idea that if you buy something nice, whether it be a pair of sunglasses, which is, there's a picture of me wearing some new fly fishing sunglasses on the front of the article, or a nice shirt or a nice pair of pants, or even socks or underwear or a hat or a rain jacket, whatever it is, don't be afraid to wear it out and about. Now, you might not. That might be make total sense to you, where if you buy a piece of fly fishing gear, you're going to wear it as much as you can, as hard as you can, no matter what you're doing. But I know that for me and for a lot of other people, that is, okay, no, this is for fly fishing. I'm saving this. I'm going to buy a $400 whatever, but I'm only going to use it when I go fishing, you know, every other week. So different people have different perspectives. And I'm not telling you how to do it, but just I would say if you want to get something nice that's fly fishing focused or fly fishing kind of specific, don't hesitate to use it doing normal stuff. So what I'm not saying is don't mow the lawn in your, you know, really nice flats boots, but don't be afraid to wear that nice fly fishing shirt, you know, out for a casual dinner. Now, you know, if you don't like all the buttons and flaps and capes and snaps and all that sort of stuff, then that's what I'm talking about. But if it's a nice comfortable shirt, wear it. If it's a nice comfortable pants, wear them. I've got some awesome under wader pants. They're just soft and they fit well and they stretch. Great little pants. They cost a lot of money, so I don't wear them when I'm wrestling with my kids, but I wear them around. They're great pants, and I don't think that wearing them out and around, or you know, wearing them out with the guys, is going to cause them to fail the next time I go fishing. So just a couple of words on that. This week's recommendation on the podcast, I'm actually going to recommend the waders that I was talking about earlier. So if you are looking for a pair of waterfowl waders, or you're looking for a pair of cold fishing boot-foot waders, check out the Frog Togs Grand Refuge series of waders. I think mine are the 3.0. Now, I will say, there's a lot more fabric in these than there is in fly fishing waders. That's the only really big criticism I have on them. Even with the insulated liner inside of them, they're a little bit baggy. Allows me to move, allows me to flex, but I haven't fished in fast moving water, but I could really guess that in faster moving water, you'd feel that current against you a lot more because there's more fabric. I bought it in the slimmest fit possible, and it's still an issue. But that was not something that bothered me while I was on the water. It didn't bother me. I was sitting in the tree in the tree stand. Yeah, I don't shoot ducks out of trees, I promise. And sitting on the in the duck blind didn't bother me. I was in the kayak, didn't bother me. I was walking through the woods. But that is just one drawback. But otherwise, awesome, comfortable, foot fit in great. They moved around fine. There's only the bare minimum features, but it's everything that you need. The zip in and zip out liner is fantastic. I was able to wear them early season and in unseasonably warm days late in the season. And then I kept that zip in liner in, and I was able to basically hunt in my work clothes. So I had on like a pair of khakis and just like a dress shirt, and threw these waders on with a hunting jacket on top. And I was totally fine to fish, you know, from or hunt from whatever 5 to 9 in the morning. And I was plenty warm. So definitely check them out. I'll put a link to the Frog Togs Grand Refuge boot foot insulated, zip in, zip out insulated waders on the show notes for this page at castingacross.com. Real quick, if you ever have any questions about a recommendation I make, if you want more details, let me know, matthew@castingacross.com. Thanks for listening to the Casting Across Fly Fishing Podcast. Please subscribe to your favorite podcast app and rate the podcast on iTunes. Then head over to castingacross.com for 3 posts a week on the people, places, and things that go into the pursuit of fish.
You're listening to the Waypoint Podcast Network, brought to you in part by HuntStand, the number one hunting and land management app.